got dust on my shoes. Need my cranky string. I've got dust on my shoes. Need my cranky string. It's been a mean dry spell, but I think it's gonna rain. Well, the storm clouds rolling, my dog's pulling on his chain. Well, the storm clouds rolling, my dog's pulling on his chain. It's been a long dry spell, but I think it's gonna rain. Better rain.
It's been 5 years since the Grammy-winning, multi-platinum-selling Boz Scaggs has come out with a new studio album, A Long Dry Spell. But now there's Memphis, which looks back at his long and storied career. And to further make up for lost time, another CD, The Essential Boz Scaggs, will be released next week. It's my great pleasure to be able to welcome Boz Scaggs to our show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard.
What led you to return to Memphis to record your latest? Because you recorded all over the place, haven't you?
Pretty much. I guess I've covered most of the American bases anyway, a few in London. Actually, it's a collaboration between producer Steve Jordan, who is a very fine drummer, and myself, and therefore a collaboration between a fellow musician and a collaboration in a producer's sense. And both things sent us to Memphis. We had worked in a studio there, each of us individually in the past, called it's the High Studios in Memphis. And we both had very strong hits, that is, hits, personal buzzes about having been there, about the sound and the feel of the room.
That's High Studios, High Records.
Records, Royal Studio.
Yeah, that was Willie Mitchell's area.
Correct. Willie had was a producer. He owned the studio. He was an arranger. He was a co-writer with a number of other well-known musicians and writers. Lots of hits on that label and beyond. So Willie's legacy is found in the Royal Studios. And Willie had done some horn arrangements for me and produced a couple of tracks. And Steve Jordan had had experience. And as we talked, as Steve and I talked about, thought about how we might best collaborate and where our common soul might be, It all roads pointed to Memphis.
Do you have family there? Any roots?
In fact, my father was from Memphis, and my grandfather before him, and that whole side of the family is migrated over into Arkansas, and my wife is from Memphis. But I don't have any direct experience myself. I've never lived there and really never spent time to.
But it sounds like it's in the family genes.
It's something's in the genes.
Still, you recorded your 1969 breakthrough album, Boz Scaggs, in Muscle Shoals in 1960, with the Muscle Shoals rhythm section and Dwayne Allman. Mm-hmm. Have you seen the film about Muscle Shoals?
I haven't. I went to the theater yesterday afternoon. And I thought my wife had reserved tickets. We showed up on time for the film down on Bleecker Street and it was sold out. And I said, I'm in this film. Can I please, as if there might be some tickets back in the sound booth as when all else is sold out, but I couldn't get in. But I've been getting it from all sides that this is a must-see film.
Well, it'll probably bring back all sorts of fabulous memories. But if they had shot a film about Royal Studios, that probably would have brought back all sorts of wonderful memories.
In fact, I saw a film about Royal Studios the other night. I was at Lucasfilm in San Francisco, where I live, and they were screening a film that production has just been completed on that sounds as though it's very similar in intent and content as the Muscle Shoals film.
There are a number of classics on this new CD, like Rainy Night in Georgia and Karina, and some originals. How do you choose songs for an album? And how important is it to mix some songs that everybody knows with the new things?
There was no real forethought in terms of how to mix up or what the material might be. We had no agenda in that respect, only that it would be material that that felt good to sing. Jordan, again, the producer, and I exchanged material over a period of time. And we knew we were going to Memphis, and we felt pretty free to do anything we wanted to do. If we were going to try to stay in an R&B context or a bluesy context, there would, of course, have been some perimeters around the material that we chose. But the idea of going there was, and working with the section that we had chosen, gave us absolute and complete freedom to go in any direction.
Including Charlie Musselwhite and Spooner Oldham, speaking of Muscle Shoals.
Mm-hmm.
Do you bring them in, or are they located in Memphis?
I'm not real sure where Spooner is living now. It might be in Georgia. Charlie Musselwhite is actually a neighbor of mine in Northern California, and we overdubbed Charlie. He came over to my house one afternoon and did those tracks with me. But Spooner's from down there. The other players, most notably Willie Weeks on bass, who's a old friend of and musical cohort of mine for many years, and a constant companion of Steve Jordan on the drums, and the other two key components were the keyboard chair, which was represented by Charles Hodges, Memphis native with a high rhythm section, and Jim Cox, a keyboard player that I've worked with over years.
Well, how important is it to the various musicians that you work with? Do they influence the way the record turns out? I mean, do they influence the way you wind up singing a vocal?
They have everything to do with all of that. I've always chosen players that I know. Ever since I was a band guy, ever since I stopped being a band kind of musician, I have been very conscious of the musicians that I've come across and worked with, and it's as big a part of the process as anything else. The songs, the location, it's about the musicians with me. So it's absolutely imperative that I'm with people that I trust, and they lead to a great deal where I go.
And you maintain your own band, but you've also continued to work with the Steely Dan guys, Donald Fagen and Michael McDonald, as the Dukes of September. Didn't you recently complete a 47-city tour with them?
That's right. Last year we did at least 47. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You say you connected with them in the chapter two of your career.
That's right. Yeah. I was thinking I stole away for 10 or 12 years. I skipped the 80s. In 90, I came back into music. Music came back into me, actually.
You know? Why had you dropped out?
I had really had a busy 70s, and as the 80s broke, I had a world tour. I had a greatest hits album. I had a third big multi-platinum record, and I needed some time away. I needed time to take care of some personal events and to be home, and I think the prescription called for 6 weeks, or maybe it was 6 months that I was had given myself to take away, and that turned into a year, and then two, and three, and I've described it in different ways. The feeling in general was like jumping off a fast moving train and finally rolling to a halt and watching that train go off into the distance, and then having enough of a breath of fresh air to look around and find that there was life after fame and fortune. And I count to this day that experience of getting away from it important in the fact that I'm still doing what I do. And
well, did it also give you an opportunity to listen to other kinds of music, because you've done more jazz-oriented things since your return?
I don't think that was it. I think music itself, I was burned. I was stagnant and wanted to get away from everything. I didn't really listen to too much new.
Well, I'm glad that you came back, because I think you're sounding better than ever. We're going to hear one of your big hits as we go into a break, Lido Shuffle, which is included in the Essential Boz Skags, which will be released next week.
Lido missed the boat that day. He left the shack, but that was all he missed, and he ain't coming back. He had a tombstone bar and a gin joint car. He made a stop just long enough to grab a handle off the top. Next stop, Chi-Town. Leo put the money down and let him roll. He said, one more job ought to get it. One shot, no, we quit it. One for the road, Lido. Whoa, he's for the mind, he's for the show. Lido's waiting for the goal, Lido. Whoa, he said,
when the moon comes up, the sun goes down, the meteor stars are creeping round. Flame in her blood, fire on her breath. 14 names carved on her chest. She got a rose tattooed on her thigh. Dead man raised the sign. Dry my young blood wine. My baby's gone. Can't lie.
Cadillac Walk from Boz Skaggs' new CD called Memphis. There's also a new The Essential Boz Skaggs that will be released next week. Two CDs in a couple of weeks after 5 years of nothing from Boz Skaggs. That guitar reminded me a bit of Roebuck Staples. Was that your intention there?
I actually swiped that lick from Buddy Miller, a great Nashville producer and guitar player. I credited him on the album for that lick, and I saw him a couple of weeks ago at a festival in California, and he said, I've had a lot of licks stolen, and I've never been, no one's ever credited me for that theft, and thank you very much, he said.
You grew up in small Oklahoma and Texas towns. What kind of music were you exposed to there?
I am very much a product of radio of the 50s, and I guess it was similar to radio. Top 40 was just happening, although the part of the country that I lived in, a small town in North Texas near Dallas, we had access to a lot of R&B radio in addition to country music and Top 40. But we were also getting radio waves out of Nashville, Tennessee. WLAC had a great R&B station, a hardcore, dark, deep soul station, and of course music out of New Orleans, jazz out of Chicago. That was when there were a lot of illegal 50,000 watt stations just hitting the airwaves at night and inspired a lot of my generation.
You've also talked about WRR's show, Cat's Caravan.
That's probably the most important radio that I've ever heard. This fellow Jim Lowe, a disc jockey, was encyclopedic in his knowledge and of the lore and the beginnings of R&B and blues out of the Delta through Memphis, out of New Orleans, and he was an academic of academic importance.
So he was teaching you at the same time.
He was teaching. He was literally. You'd go to the books after listening to A Night of Memphis Slim or Muddy Waters or Lightnin' Hopkins or whoever.
One of your high school friends, Lewis McAdams, later described it as, I embarked on a journey each night into the life I wanted to live.
That was it.
So this was creating a fantasy life for you.
Well, this is connecting on a neural level. I saw Ray Charles when I was 14 live in Dallas in a 3,000-seat auditorium, and it I'm quite sure that in some way it rearranged my neural system. I've been trying to get that high ever since.
You learned to play the guitar how early in your life?
It was about that time, 13 or 14 years old. There was a folk craze. And of course, the blues were all over the place.
And you were born William Roy Skaggs. How did you become Boz?
I started going to a new school from my small town in Texas. I started a school in Dallas, there was a get acquainted party with new students and old students the weekend before school started. And this kid who was a regular at the school came up to me and he came up to me and says, "Your real name, Bosley Skaggs." And I thought, it must be a joke, and I'll go along with that. And I said, "Yes." And he says, "And you're from Bosley, North Carolina." And I was going along with both of which were complete fallacies. But I went along with it until a few days later it was time for me to deny that and get back to my name. And as nicknames stick when you're a kid, it stuck. And the more I denied it, of course, the more it stuck. And
well, you would have been Bill Skaggs.
That's right, yeah.
Boz works so much better as a trademark.
I wouldn't have chosen that one, and it horrifies me on some moments of reality.
Of course, just a normal name didn't hurt Steve Miller, one of your old friends.
Mm-hmm.
You go back a long time with him, with Ben Sidran. Were you playing in various bands when you were growing up?
In high school, I sat in sometimes with Steve's band. It was called the Marksmen. And that was a high school weekend college fraternity, kind of a rave-up band that we played in. And then I later connected with Ben Sidran in Madison, Wisconsin, turned me on to a lot of good jazz. And he liked our style of rhythm and blues. And so we got to play together. We listened to Ben playing jazz at the Ratskeller in Madison at the university, and he listened to us on the weekends, and eventually we merged.
But in 75, which was a particularly big year for you, you had all these pop hits. Silk Degrees was the album. We played Lido Shuffle earlier, Lowdown, What Can I Say, We're All Alone. Did you think you were going to be a pop musician for the rest of your life?
I don't know that I ever really saw myself entirely in that light as a pop musician. It certainly was occupying all my time at that point, and I followed that up with a couple of albums, and it pretty much defined that part of my life. But no, I don't really think. I think one of the things was actually quite the opposite about me. It was kind of hard to figure out where I was at. There was a lot of changing, and I've gotten into a little bit of hot water from time to time when I'm hired to be someone who comes and plays the hits, and I show up with a four-piece jazz band.
They want to be an oldies.
People, have an image of you, and it's the hardest thing in the world to try to move into another area. Although I wasn't trying, I was really following one foot after the other.
Although you said that during your hiatus, beginning in 1980, it wasn't that you listened to new music, but when you came back, you were playing different kinds of music. So did you see this as an opportunity to remake yourself?
I didn't really see it or think of it as an opportunity to remake myself. I was just following my instincts. And I, in fact, was returning to more or less where I began. I was initially a blues and rhythm and blues player, and I've always had an interest in jazz. I've always loved pop music, some country music, et cetera, et cetera. So that time away just let me be myself, and I think it probably perhaps subconsciously got me away from the pop side of the scene.
Well, I was thinking about these two jazz albums, But Beautiful and Speak Low. Mm-hmm. Although you've said I'm not a jazz musician or singer, they mm-hmm. sure sound like jazz.
Well, they were in a jazz context. The musicians I worked with on the first of those standards records was a traditional quartet with saxophone, piano, bass, drums. The second one I stretched a little further, worked with Gil Goldstein, a jazz pianist, arranger, and use an ensemble of sophisticated jazz musicians.
And songs like Kurt Vile's Speak Low, which is definitely not a song that connects to R&B, but is one of the most beautiful songs ever written.
Indeed it is, yeah. I have always loved the material. Like most people in the middle 20th centuries, the music was omnipresent and it seeps in and it's been done by so many people. It was my pleasure, my good fortune to run across these jazz guys who were working in my studio in San Francisco and invited me to sing a song with them, and that lit a spark.
And now you and your wife make wine in Napa?
We don't make wine. We have a small property in the hills between up in Napa, Sonoma area. And as a part of other things that we planted it around our property, some grapevines showed up. And we followed an instinct that many people over many, many centuries have followed. You see these vines and the little berries pop up, and at one point you wonder what that might taste like in a squished up and ferment and put it in a glass. And it's a very, very infectious little habit. And that is the growing of the vines and the flowering of the fermenting of the wine and so forth. So we fell into that, and it was intended to be family and friends thing, but the cases of wine start stacking up, and we got ourselves into a little business. I don't make the wine. We only cultivate the grapes, and we commission the wine making. But it's turned into a little business for
well, they
wine.
Do say that the best way to make a small fortune in the wine business is start off with a big fortune.
A huge fortune, exactly.
I hope that
I can say
you.
That I can vouch for that. Fortunately, we're very small time, 300 or 400 cases a year. Doesn't get us into too much trouble.
So I'm not about to find anything in my local shop here in New York.
Oh, well, you do. You will, in fact, and in several fine restaurants here. Yes.
Under what name?
It's called Skaggs Vineyard, of all things.
We also have Memphis, the latest album from Boz Skaggs. We still call it albums, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the upcoming, The Essential Boz Skaggs. Thank you so much for being on our show. We're going to go out with one of the tracks from Memphis, You Got Me Crying.
I've got a little girl, and when she holds me in her arms, it's out of this world. She helped keep that pearl, she got me crying. A valley of tears, you know who they are, because
Boz Skaggs will be in conversation with Anthony DeCurtis at the 92nd Street Y tonight at 8:15. That's at Lexington Avenue and 92nd Street. For more information and a link for tickets, go to our show page at WNYC.org. And I hope you can join us in the green space on Wednesday, October 30th, for the final part of our Low Pit and Locavore series. I'll be talking to James Beard Award-winning Chef Bill Telepan about how to get kids to eat healthy, delicious food. And we'll have some young critics to taste test food that's also nutritious. To get your tickets, go to WNYC.org/thegreenspace. Hope to see you there. Coming up next, our book club with Peter Carey talking about Oscar and Lucinda. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. Find us on Facebook and Twitter, where our handle is @LeonardLopate.